Hi, welcome to Menopause, Marriage and Motherhood, the podcast for women over 45. My name's Karen O'Connor. I'm a blogger, author, entrepreneur, property developer, mother of four, and I've been married for 30 years. I love health and fitness and anything creative, and I'm absolutely fascinated with personal development and psychology. Join me each week for conversations about life beyond 45. I'll have inspiring stories, lots of guest interviews, and tips and tricks to hack our brains so we can intentionally and deliberately create an amazing future for ourselves. If it's your first time here, hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. I'd love it if you share this episode with your friends on social media and let me know your key takeaways because I'd love to hear them. Enjoy and welcome to this episode of the Menopause, Marriage and Motherhood podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm here today with my amazing friend, Kylie Mitchell. When I first met you, you were in recovery from a brain tumor.
I was.
What happened there? Because it's actually quite relevant to what you're going through now as well, isn't it?
It is. Oh, yeah, it is. How did it come about? Yeah, I was the surgery for that, was around 7 years ago. So it's the 7 year cycle. Yeah, with that, I just had a small absence seizure. And so they rolled me in thinking they're testing for epilepsy and found a brain tumor, completely to everyone's surprise. Yeah, and from that, it was just a roller coaster of within 6 weeks, I was in for major brain surgery. And yeah, everything sort of rolled on from there. And it was a huge, huge change in life patterns, health, all sorts of things. Because prior to that, I had considered myself quite healthy.
And that was a bit of a wake-up call.
A little bit of a wake-up call that I possibly wasn't doing the right things. That, you know, there's healthy and then there's healthy.
And you were also, at the same time as doing this, you were going through... Or when did your relationship break up?
3 months after the surgery.
Right, yeah, okay.
3 months after the brain surgery. So I was going through a 2 year court case for the separation during the recovery from the brain surgery.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you became a grandmother around the same time?
I did, became a grandmother towards the end of that time. So yeah, that little girl is gorgeous 5 and a half now. And I also had to restart a business during all of that as well.
So did you let your business go when all that happened and you rebuilt it, you restarted?
I closed it down for 6 months. And then I wasn't really well enough to start it up again, but because the marriage had broken up and I had a mortgage to pay and all of that sort of stuff, I started it up part-time and I was doing about 12 hours a week was the maximum that I could manage with the brain injury that I sustained from the surgery.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think this conversation about the brain injury and how you recovered from that, this is a different conversation. And I just want, because it's really fascinating how you recovered from it and everything and what you did. And then sort of fast forward 7 years, and how long ago was it? About 4 months ago, you found out that you had breast cancer.
Yeah. That was, where are we now? That would have been early November, I think.
Wow.
We're now
mid-January, so only about 2.5 months ago.
Oh yeah. It might've been the end of October then. Yeah. So it was, a bit of a shock. I wasn't expecting that, but I wasn't expecting the brain tumor either.
So how did you find the breast cancer? What happened?
Oh, mum's had breast cancer. So since I was 40, I've been getting mammograms because you can get them free once you're 40 if there's family history and nobody tells you that. So I harassed people back around my 40s and found that out. And so I've just been getting precautionary breast scans and I was about due, you know, so it's been about 2 years. I'm about to move states. Let's get all the medical tests done before I go. Because then I don't have to worry about finding things quickly when I'm in the new town. So it was just a precautionary. And I'd also, you like this, I'd also, you know, you check your boobs in the mirror and all that sort of stuff. I was looking at one of them going, wow, that looks a bit weird underneath one. And I didn't know if it was just stretch marks and age or something was going on. And it turned out that it was stretch marks and age because the cancer was somewhere else. So, it was kind of like when they came back and said, you know, it's because they didn't find it on the ultrasound. They found it on the mammogram. So I'd had the ultrasound. They've gone, yeah, you're fine. It's all perfectly fine. And then got the call back from the mammogram. And it's like, oh, hang on. It's not fine. And it's in a completely different area. So it was a complete fluke. Again, very much like the brain tumor. So I feel incredibly grateful that both of them were found sort of by accident, because I wasn't there to deal with, you know, I was there, I was getting the test done because of something else.
Yep.
Yeah.
So did your mum actually die of breast cancer, or did she?
No, she's still alive. It was, it ended up being, from what I understand, it was pre-cancer.
Right.
So technically it wasn't breast cancer, it was pre-cancer, the cells were turning. So she had it out and had the radiation. And that would have been 10, 12 years ago, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. So given that she was already in around 60, that's considered an age-related breast cancer. And because I'm 48, that's considered a different thing. And because in mine, actually, I had both pre-cancer and breast cancer going on.
So what happened when you were diagnosed? What was, that must have been a bit of a shock.
it was, but it was like this slow lead up. So by the time someone said you have cancer, I'd sort of worked it out for myself, because I'd had some skin things removed, because the doctor freaked out and thought I'd had skin cancer, and I'd had another one. I'd harassed him to remove something else I didn't like. The one he thought was cancer was perfectly fine. The one I didn't like was turning to some form of skin cancer. So I was in my head going, oh my God, my body's tried to do cancer again after the brain tumor. And I was waiting for the mammogram results. And so I said to the skin specialist, who works in the same offices as my GP, I said, look at these, have these results come in for the breast scan? And he went out and he came back and he went, look, they've been referred up the ladder. And so I've just gone, right. And he gave me that look, do you know the look they give you when they don't want to tell you, but they're kind of feeling a bit sorry for you? He gave me that one. Okay. And so I've just gone, all right. And it was only 2 days later, I got a call from the actual mammogram people. Didn't even go back to the GP. I got the call from the mammogram, the people just going, Kylie, we want you to come back in for some more testing. And I went, okay, when? And they said in an hour and a half. I've just gone, shit. Okay. Yes, I can come back in. And they were great, because I've gone in and I've walked in, and the poor lady doing the mammogram went, so can you tell me what's going on? Nobody else is telling me what's going on. And she just went, yes, we're looking closer, we're looking at this. And she showed me on the scans, this and this, and this is what it's called. And she was fabulous. So I naturally went home and Dr. Googled what it was called, as you do. And
of course you do.
And I looked up that and I went, yeah, do you know what? I can't find a single reference using those words that's not talking about breast cancer. And so by the time we did that, then I went back in for, they'd call me again after that one, just straight back in and said, yeah, we want a biopsy. Again, bypass the GP. They just called me straight back in. And the doctor there, the radiologist, he just waltzed straight in. And then the people around him, while they were prepping me, do you know when they're being too nice?
Mm-hmm.
They're doing that to me, and they're worried that I'm going to get a bit faint, and they're worried this, that, and the other. I ended up saying to him, look, as long as you're not going to tell me you're cutting my head open, I'm okay. So it's okay if you just tell me. But then the doctor just walked in. He said, right, Kylie, look, I'll give it to you straight. I'm pretty sure you've got breast cancer. And I just went, okay, yep, kind of figured that out. And so it was a bit of a process, but I'd sort of gotten there and dealt with it on my own before I heard the words. But I think it was actually once I got the biopsy results, I sat in the car and I did a video post online, and I just sat in the car park and just lost it, you know, to actually hear you definitely have breast cancer. Not we think you have, not we're biopsying, but to hear you definitely have was, I think I did a lot of my processing in that car park, part of it on video.
Yeah.
So it's been up and down since then. You know, you have times like now that I've got no, you know, practically no pain or anything at the site anymore, you're sort of going, well, I don't feel sick, I don't feel ill, and technically I'm cancer free because they've cut it out.
Okay.
Yeah, so what they say is once they've cut it out, technically you're cancer free. You know, and I haven't metastasized, it hasn't spread, it was a low grade, but now we just have to treat the chance of it reoccurring.
So, but this has kind of gone on from that, from when you were first diagnosed. What's been the process since then? Because sitting on the sidelines and talking to you and watching the stuff that you've posted on Facebook or YouTube, wherever you've posted it, there's been a lot of stop start. Oh, I'm doing this. Oh, no, I'm not doing that. Oh, I'm going to do this instead. Oh, no, they can't do that. Oh, they forgot to do this. Like, didn't they take the wrong bit out or you marked the wrong bit or something?
They did. They did. Unfortunately, I have ample enough to spare. So it's, you know, it's, you can't tell. Yeah, no, it's been a lot of stop and start because you can't do B, C and D without knowing an exact answer to A, but they want you to try and organize stuff for the other stuff, but you don't have answer A, so you don't know who you're talking to. And when you do try and talk to people, they go, look, can you give me a rough roadmap? It's like, well, no, this person will tell you that. And you're going, well, that person's not telling me. So it's a lot of that sort of stuff. And
why is that? Is that just because they're not certain? Like, why is that? Why isn't it? Okay, you've been diagnosed, right? You need to go see them and then you go see them and then you go do that. Why isn't it like that? What was missing?
Well, to start with, it's because you're dealing with the surgery to... You know, to start with, the GPs can't really tell you much at all. They go, you have to see a surgeon.
Right.
And that's it. And then when you see the surgeon, they're like, well, we can't really tell you much until we know exactly what it is, because the biopsy says this, but the biopsy, when you actually get in there, it could be something completely different. So because they only biopsy a little spot, and mine was very small, they could get in there and find all sorts of things wrong. And I've spoken to other ladies who have thought they've had type B cancer, and that's not an actual type. I'm just using it as an example.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when they've woken up from surgery, it turns out they've got type J, and it's much bigger than I thought it was, and it's gone to more areas. So there's a lot of unknowns. So when you're someone like me who wants information, it's a lot of grey areas and a lot of stop and start. And so I saw the surgeon, went and we were with all the bushfires. I was at Port Macquarie, and so it was like I was going, well, I'm happy to go public. And they're going, well, we can't give you a date for public because we're treating all the people affected by the bushfires. If you go private, we'll give you a date. So it's like, all right, fine, we'll go private. Went in and got that done. And then the results were a little bit delayed. And so you're getting all ready for the next one and it's delayed. And in the middle of all this, I've had to delay moving between states as well, because this is going on. So I had to decide, do I stay in Port Macquarie to have the operation? Do I go to Melbourne to have the operation? And because of the bushfires, there were certain days we couldn't actually get out of Port Macquarie. So there was no guarantee I could actually get to Melbourne in a reasonable amount of time. So anyway, we eventually got the surgery done. The results came back and they didn't do what they call clear the margins. So they got the cancer. They realized the cancer was in a bed of precancer cells, but you can't see precancer cells with the naked eye. So they take them out and then they realized that even though they got it all, it was too close to one of the edges to say I was completely clear of it. So they have to go back and do what they call a margin clearing. So they booked me back in for that, but then I had to go through the public system because then the private was full, but they had a vacancy in the public. So I went back through the public hospital this time and they did it. And because I used different anesthetics to the first time, I was quite ill after the second surgery. And it took a long time for them to sort of get me all right to leave. And then, got a call the next morning being told that they'd actually taken some of the wrong tissue and could I come back in an hour and a half for a third surgery. And there was tears because I was still feeling really like I was less than 24 hours out of a surgery that I'd come out of badly, and they want me to go back again for another one immediately. And they did another one. So I had back-to-back surgeries 24 hours apart. And fortunately they used a different combination of anesthetics the third time, and I came out of that a bit better, but they kept me in overnight on that one. So yeah, and then it was like, can I move yet? I don't know if I can move yet. I don't know if I can get flights. We're getting into Christmas, you know, flights are getting really expensive if I can even get them. And so I ended up only getting the all clear to move to Melbourne on late Friday, and I had flights booked for the Sunday. I had already moved out of my unit. I was staying with a friend for that whole last month, going through the surgeries, basically squatting at a friend's house because I'd had to be out of the unit that we were moving out of. So it was all a bit, it wasn't ideal. You know, I would have preferred some sort of luxury resort to go back to, but my friend was gorgeous, you know, that I was able to just stay, and I and kept extending it because it was meant to be a 2-week stay, and it ended up being over a month stay, and her kids were showing up for Christmas, and, you know, she was just beautiful, and I don't know what I would have done without her support in town there. I would have ended up in a motel on my own, and yeah, it was just, trying times.
And then I remember seeing a video somewhere of you, you were in a car and you were talking about you didn't realise how bumpy the car was. I thought you were driving to Melbourne when you did that. You're like, oh my God, this is so painful.
Who knew how bumpy cars were? And it's because your breast bounces in the car and you don't, you know, all those of us who have breasts, you don't pay attention to that most of the time, you know, unless it's that part of the cycle and you're having a particularly bad one and they're sore, you don't pay attention to it. So I spent nearly a month from the first operation until I didn't have to do it after the second one. I spent a month sitting in the passenger side of the car and occasionally while driving, holding my breast, sitting in traffic, holding my breast. I know, getting the odd stare from people. And poor Lachlan, my son, he's got me in his car driving me around, or in my car with me sitting there holding my breast because it hurts. And the sort of where I had the surgery was on the top half of the breast, so it's sort of the skin pulls more. Ooh. So it was, I discovered how uncomfortable that is. And I don't care how tight that sports bra is, they still bounce.
So where are you at with everything now?
I have, I start radiation on Tuesday. Radiation is, I've had it described to me as a super strong x-ray, and it's localized just to the left breast, and they localize it onto the site where the surgery took place. And so they roll you into a machine similar to an MRI machine, not as bulky. And they line you all up, and you've got to ideally hold your breath to expand your lungs to get that site as far away from your heart as possible. So you've got to hold your breath while they do it. And it'll only take about 20 minutes, but it's 5 days a week for about the next 4 weeks. They said 3.5 to 4 weeks, and then I've got a super dose of 5 super doses, which is, from what I understand, a double dose for 5 days at the end. Then after that, I have to go on a hormonal medication. And I just found out earlier this morning that I have an appointment to see the oncologists for that in 2 weeks at a different hospital, because once again, I'm swapping between private and public hospitals again. And the drug that I'm expecting to go on is called tamoxifen, and it effectively suppresses your hormones. So it's going to kind of forces you into menopause, or gives you all the symptoms of menopause, because it forces the cancer that I had, and there's all different types, but the one I had was estrogen and progesterone positive. And what that means is it's sourcing through my hormones, and being perimenopausal, your hormones are all over the place and stuff like that. Yeah. So what they want to do is they want to stop cancer cells accessing the hormones. So they give you drugs to suppress all the hormones, and it kind of shunts you into a menopausal experience.
So it's basically the direct opposite of hormone replacement therapy, is it?
Yeah, no, they want to suppress all of that down. Yeah. Right. And the really good news, because I was freaking out about that, because I'm the sort of person, I've never been able to take the pill. I can't take any of the birth control things because my body freaks out with any hormonal intervention. And so I was going, oh, you know, this isn't going to be fun. And you could do that for 5 years.
So you've got to take these drugs for 5 years.
Yeah. And if I do actually go into menopause during that time, they just swap you onto a different drug, but they want 5 years. But what I found out is I'm working with a naturopath as well. And she's done, like, you go to the doctor, you get your estrogen tests, and they go, yeah, you're estrogen positive, you're not, this sort of stuff. She did I had to do a saliva test with the naturopath, because the blood tests from the doctors, and I'm paraphrasing here, they test how much estrogen is in your system or something like that. They're not testing what estrogen you're actually using, and you're actually meant to dump estrogen out of your system regularly. And most women who get breast cancer like mine don't dump the estrogen. 80% of them are sky high in estrogen because their body is not effectively eliminating it from the system like it's meant to. But normal blood tests through the doctors won't show you that. So I had it done through the naturopath. And the great news is I'm apparently very close to menopause anyway. So how's that for a bonus?
Great. You get all the hot flushes and rashes.
Oh, no, she's giving me drops for the hot flushes and they've stopped it. It's great.
We'll put that naturopath's name in the notes from the show.
She's fantastic. She's absolutely brilliant. And so what this test showed was that my progesterone is low, perfectly normal for a woman who's perimenopausal. It's dropping out. It's what it's meant to do. But what it showed was my estrogen wasn't sky high. So I was one of the 20% of women with my cancer whose estrogen is actually low.
Oh. So
my estrogen's on the way out anyway, which means that I'm actually not long for the fertile life. That means that I hopefully won't experience many side effects from this drug to suppress the hormones because mine had naturally gotten quite low anyway.
So going back to side effects, what side effects does the radiation therapy have? Because it's not like chemotherapy, is it? Chemotherapy, you ingest it and it's just like...
No. This is local. So the most common side effects is you can get a dermatitis, a radiation dermatitis on the breast, and you can go bright red, anywhere from pink to bright red on the breast. You can get skin peeling and stuff like that. It can feel very hot. That's very normal, and they can give you some creams, but you can also do things like spray green tea on the breast. Oh, you can put manuka honey on it, really high grade manuka honey. There's a couple of different things you can do naturally with that. You can get fatigue. A lot of women get fatigued as the process goes on, and that's just really a matter of, they don't say get a heap of rest. They say don't over rest because that will make it worse. So they actually want you to exercise, and even exercise for at least half an hour before your radiation treatment is ideal. So they want you exercising every day, regardless of how fatigued you are. You need to get up and you need to exercise because it reduces the fatigue. Yeah, they're the two biggies. There are long-term, there are some very rare side effects, which I can't remember off the top of my head. But the more serious long-term ones are the ones that can show up in 15 to 20 years. And they are, it can damage the wall of the heart. It can damage the lungs in just underneath where the breast is. And it can also weaken the rib cage just under that area as well. So, but those side effects won't show up for like 15 to 20 years. And it can cause cancer in and of itself. But again, it's a case of the stats, if you want to talk about it that way, the stats of me getting a recurring breast cancer are far higher than me getting damage from the radiation.
Right.
So it's like, for me, it was like weighing those up and going, all right, what is my statistically best path forward in terms of ongoing health for the next 40 years? And how do I increase that through any other complementary and additional therapies that I can?
Now, how did you find this naturopath? Because it's, you know, it's not standard practice here in Australia for a doctor to say, oh, and by the way, there's this really good naturopath that you can work with. How did you come across her?
I actually Googled oncology naturopaths just to see what would happen. And it turns out it's a thing. And it turns out that when you come to the city, like when you're in the country, it's not a thing. You know, it doesn't happen. There's naturopaths and there's oncologists, and the two, never the twain shall meet. In the city, it's quite common to get naturopaths who will work in with the oncology treatments and who knows the oncologists and the radiation therapists and all of this sort of stuff. And so I found her. She was in the suburb that we're ultimately moving to. And she also does phone calls. She'll do consults on phone calls or online. And so I just rang her just to suss her out, really. And she was brilliant. And she didn't load me with a heap of products. She just went, look, you know, have you got a chemist warehouse there? Good. Go and get these two herbs. So it was just vitamin C and zinc and stuff like that. She goes, we're not going to load you up with anything else. Just go to the chemist, get those. They're economical. So she was really realistic about your ability to take in information. She was really realistic about the financial costs of having cancer, because even if you're going through public, it still costs you money. Yeah, and so I just went, yep, she's my girl. And yeah, then once I had all of my test results and everything like that, I took them into her. She's had a look through all of my blood tests and stuff and picked out things that standard medicine says perfectly fine, but for natural therapies, they're like, it is absolutely not fine because that's going to cause you more side effects. And yeah, so she works in with all of the results via the doctors and stuff like that. When you talk to the doctors, they know who she is. brilliant. And she's hooked me up with the acupuncturists, and she basically starts this entire holistic approach to dealing with
it. I was just going
to
say that it means you end up with like the best of all worlds in a lot of respects, because you've got not just the modern Western medicine, but then you're still working and helping your body to heal itself and deal with everything, as well as the, you know, you had this breast cancer, you moved house, it was Christmas, you have to go in for surgery, and you're moving house again. Hormone levels, your stress levels are going to be really quite high at this point.
They are.
And I forgot to say, the reason you moved down to Melbourne was you were moving into a new relationship.
Yep, just because I needed something else to do.
Yes. You still got your business.
I have to start a whole new business because I can't get licensed to do what I knew we did in New South Wales in Victoria. So I have to now completely repackage and rebrand what I do and work out how to go forward, because I can't just start the same thing here.
What is it you do?
I'm a building designer, interior designer and artist, and in New South Wales. So the simplest way is to say I designed homes. I do the same job as an architect, but I'm called a building designer, just different educational paths. And I add in interior design and visual arts if people want it. And I specialise in compact, sustainable artworks you can live in. I love that line. That's why I say it. And I really am fascinated by compact design. And in New South Wales, you don't need a license to do that. Even though I'm qualified and I'm accredited, New South Wales doesn't have a licensing system. Victoria does, to their credit, because I think they should have licensing in New South Wales. Coming to Victoria, they're actually very, very strict and won't look at 20 years worth of experience, because I don't have the right bits of paper and I don't have a history of working in Victoria. I can't get a license in Victoria, but you can't work in Victoria until you have your license. It's a catch-22. So I would technically need to go and get employed by someone else for a couple of years to do that work, to be able to do what I've been doing for 20 years.
So what are you going to do?
Oh, I've decided that I'm going to pursue the ultimate dream. I wish you people could see this, because Karen's killing herself laughing. Yeah, it's about time. I figured, you know, I've been kicked by cancer twice, so I'm on my third life. So what I've always wanted to do is to have an art gallery where you can go and buy the concept for your new house. And so that way, by using visual arts as the inspiration for a house, you can do amazing compact sustainable buildings, which there's a lot of infill development going on in cities because we're running out of land. And that's the sort of design I specialize in, but then combine the visual arts with that to create incredibly unique, beautiful, you know, stunning homes that are insanely practical, insanely functional, great for the environment, create these artworks. And so what I can do is I can sell concept designs in Victoria. I just can't do the plans to lodge to council. So effectively, I'm going to keep all of the fun stuff and then make connections with other designers in the state, and then they can pick up the work for themselves to prepare that stuff for council. So it's not only getting me what I want, I'm also then helping other businesses, you know, bring in some more work.
I'm just in the space of, oh my God, hail Kylie, because exactly what you said you wanted several years ago. Just want to design houses. And what's happened? You've now been put in a situation where that's the only thing you can do.
That's it. And so I see it as really the breast cancer. It's going to sound weird, but it's an amazing bonus, because it has pushed me into this space where that, strangely, to take, you know, to create a business that doesn't currently exist in this country that I can find, is the only logical path for me. So it's something, and I wanted to do this after the brain surgery, but because of the brain injury, the divorce, and the immense amount of stress and pressure physically and all that sort of stuff, I was in no space to actually, I was in survival mode, you know, so to try and create something that didn't exist in a conservative town where I was living at the time, it was beyond me at that point, which, you know, I wanted it, but not enough, put it that way. Mm. Whereas now it's like, well, yes, I've had cancer again, but I'm not sick. I'm not, you know, I'm in a really good place emotionally. I'm in a great space with my partner. I'm in the town that's the perfect town for it, the perfect city for it. So it does seem like it's funny. Yeah, the most logical path is to pursue the ultimate dream.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, and it's quite fascinating. And now the challenge for me is to get out of my own way. Because I'm quite good at getting in my own way.
In terms of, like, when you were talking about the brain tumor earlier on and you were saying about your health and having to take care of your health and everything, what is that and how has it affected you now with what you're going through now?
Oh, from back then? Back then, it was, like I said, I was in survival mode, but what I did was I really looked at the diet and the food and stuff like that. I did start a lot of personal work as well too, because I personally believe that the brain tumor, one of the major causes of that for me was stress. And so while I considered myself healthy, I had a fairly healthy diet, I was a healthy weight, I exercised, I did all that sort of stuff. I was stressed to the eyeballs. I was in an abusive, unhealthy marriage. I was pushing the business to new levels because I'd actually, at that point, built a prototype for these art houses that I now want to do. I'd built a prototype back then. It was getting recognized around the country. Yeah, there was a lot of pressure and then the brain tumor on top of that. So I think one of the major things for my health moving forward from the brain tumor was I had to, A, do a lot of work on me to work out how not to have toxic relationships anymore, because it's never entirely one person's problem. You know, yes, my then husband had a lot of problems, but why did I accept that? Why did I allow that in my life? You know, so I had a lot of work to do on me to then be able to create healthy relationships moving forward. So, and I spent years doing that. There was a lot of looking at what I wanted to do business-wise, and you know, I tried 2 years doing another business model. And where it's come to now is with the breast cancer, it's almost like the universe has given me another kick in the butt to go, it's time. It's time to actually put into action all of this that you know, because you can, you know, paralysis by analysis, I'm great for that because I want everything to be perfect. You know, the typical artist, I'm my own worst critic. And I've done so much work and I've done studies on marketing and I've done all of this sort of stuff. And it's like the universe has just gone, okay, now it's time and we're going to set it up so that you're in the right place with the right people and the right window of time to do it, because I've been forced once again to stop and look after myself again. So so moving forward now for the health, fine tuning the diet and stuff like that, because I was paleo when I got, following paleo diet when I got diagnosed. I've been mucking around with vegan, because I know people that have, you know, healed amazing things on vegan, but having a chat to the naturopath, she was funny. She was asking me some questions. She just looks at me, she goes, you're an A blood type, aren't you? And I've gone, yes. And she's going, okay, neither of those diets for you, because your gut doesn't work the same way as other people's. And when she described why, I'm going, that's like my whole life you're talking about. And so I'm now looking at a system called Pagan, which is a cross between the two, heavily plant-based, like 70% plant-based, but you do eat a bit of really high quality fish, organic chicken, stuff like that. I'm exploring that. I'm looking at doing a lot more emotional release work, because I believe there's still stuff trapped. And if you want to get a bit esoteric, you know, cancer in the left breast is related to the mother upline, you know, the female upline. There's also stuff from, you know, the abusive marriage and stuff like that. And so a lot of people believe cancers can be linked to trapped energy in the body. And because I have a background of, you know, I studied remedial and sports massage therapy 28 years ago with a naturopath. So that's always a bit of a part of me, is to go, all right, what else is there? Not just what Western medicine says. So I'm working on some energy release with the acupuncture and stuff like that. Open up the channels, get some of whatever's blocked out. I'm going to be going to doing one of the mental health plans with the doctors to go and talk to some psychologists and stuff like that. I've touched base with a body psychotherapist as well. That's about letting your body express the emotions that are trapped. So that's interesting. I don't know how far I'll go with that, but it's interesting in terms of all the research I've been doing. And another one is getting to the gym. I've just made an appointment for Friday with a gym here, went and saw a few gyms and stuff like that. And for women my age, and particularly with cancer, and to going on these drugs, is you need to get as fit as you possibly can. Because one of the other side effects I didn't mention from these hormone drugs is lots of body aches and pains. So apparently you can feel like you've had a heavy gym workout every single day, and that's just how you feel getting out of bed. So, you know, the side effects, other side effects from these drugs are you can get the hot flushes, you get a lot of body aches and pains, you can get, can I say it, vaginal dryness. You get all of this sort of stuff. And what's hilarious is the women who have found out that I've got breast cancer through the medical system who are on this drug, that's the first one they go to tell you about the side effects. Not the aches and pains. But if you can get muscle bulk onto your frame and stuff like that, it helps your body process the hormones a lot easier. So it's about I need to basically really focus on getting physically fit and strong, not cardio stuff, muscle building stuff. So that, and also it's that emotional, mental sort of space, getting my headspace right, getting my thoughts right, retraining myself, doing some Joe Dispenza meditations and stuff like that, which is about retraining old thought patterns, because I have a lot of very negative thought patterns that I was taught growing up. And it's about reprogramming my brain, a bit of neuroplasticity, to reprogram that, to think through things differently, and stuff like that as well is huge for me in my recovery. So it's very multifaceted.
I think it'd be huge for anybody. You know, the we've all got those negative thought patterns, and it's never a done process, which is really annoying sometimes. You know, something comes up and you go, well, I worked on that 10 years ago. Seriously?
I know.
So it's never ending, and you just got to find the next thing that works to keep moving forwards and keep moving beyond it. Yeah. I didn't know about the left breast being related to your mother's line. That's interesting.
Apparently, and if it's a right breast, it's the father's side. I've done a lot of reading, so I've come across a lot of this sort of stuff. I'm taking a hugely multifaceted approach.
Out of curiosity, which side was your mum's cancer on?
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. And looking at our family history and stuff like that, if you want to just look at that one little piece, it's right for our family. There's lots of different causes of cancers, which means there's lots of different ways to approach healing or thriving or fighting it, or whichever particular term you want to use. And I quite like the term in that a lot of people in the cancer thriving community won't use on fighting cancer, because cancer is a natural part of your body. And if you say you're fighting it, you're fighting yourself. So that's why they use the term I'm a cancer thriver, as opposed to I'm a cancer survivor.
Do you use art as, I've watched you, you know, your art is a therapy for whatever you're going through, you know, and the colour, it's really interesting because the colours change depending on where you're at with everything, because you went through a definite red period.
I went through a huge red period, yep.
Everything was red or black.
Yep.
And I notice now the colours you're looking at are like really Mediterranean blues and greens, and, you know, really bright, deep colours. Deep as in depth of colour, as opposed to in your face, red.
That's my angry face. Yeah, no, I don't associate anger with red.
It's really fascinating to watch the different colours that predominate your life as you're going through the different stages.
Do you know what's interesting is, and I get asked about what inspires with me with art, or why I paint the things I do, particularly when it's abstract. And the answer is, I don't know. It's all intuitive. Mm. And so I pick the colours intuitively as to what appeals to me at the time. So I don't knowingly reflect where I'm at through the art, but I do believe the art reflects it. And it's coming out subconsciously, and that I just do it, and it's just like, oh, look, those green pencils are really pretty today.
Yeah.
So it's just like, if that appeals to me, that's what I use. So I rarely set out with a goal, unless if I'm doing figurative art, like I'm doing a bit more architectural art, which I've just started dabbling with before I moved, and I haven't done anything recently with all the house moves and stuff like that, because I do need my environment to create in. So if I'm unstable, I find the art tends to lock up a little bit. But even in those ones, I guess even in something that's figurative, the art, the colour is intuitive as to where I'm at. So if we follow the line of thought that you were talking about, it's possibly reflecting that I'm just in a better space within myself.
Oh, no, like, you know, without the judgment, you're just in a different space to where you were, you know? It's not a judgment whether there was a lot of anger when it was red. It's just that it's fascinating that you go through those periods of like predominantly something and then predominantly the next thing. And
you know what I've just noticed as you've said that is I also do it with what I wear. I tend to wear the same colors that I'm painting with.
I'm looking at her earrings as we're talking. and a necklace.
Yeah, my necklace is green. Everything tends to happen, like happens that way as I get drawn just to that colors. Look at that, even my juice is green.
So it's kind of like you immerse yourself in something and you experience that immersion. And I'm getting really woo-woo here.
Do you know what? And I had never thought of that. Like, I think I was vaguely aware of you know, this color is appealing to me at this point. Mm. But when you said it that way, it was just suddenly, it just like the little light turned on. It's just like, yeah, I do. Yes, I do. Now I'm going to tell people I know that I do that. And it's part of my inspiration. Dear me. No, yeah, that's it. So it's just, you heard it here. I'm inspired. And so I live it.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? It becomes part of your life. It's, you know,
it does, doesn't it? And I hadn't realized.
Yeah. Oh, it's an expression of where you're at that point. And yet at the same time, it doesn't mean anything. It just
is
what you like right now.
Yeah. And you know, I love sort of realizing that about myself is that, you know, that saying, you don't see the forest for the trees, is I rarely see myself how other people tell me they see me. But when people point stuff out, if I sit back, I go, oh yeah, actually that's true. But if you had have asked me just to say something, I would have gone, I don't know. I don't do anything. I just do stuff. Yeah. So I do very much immerse myself. I wonder if I do it with my food. Well, that's fascinating because I'm now looking at my green juice going, I'm going to have to go and pay a bit of attention to what I'm buying. Because do you know what? I don't like red capsicum anymore. I like yellow and orange capsicum.
Oh, that is so cool. Because as you're talking, I'm thinking back to when my kids were little and one in particular would, you know, for 2 years, all he'd eat was cheese and Vegemite sandwiches. That was it.
Yeah.
And pasta. Like nothing else passed his lips. It was just those things. And it's almost like you've not lost that childlike thrill of getting so involved in something. You know, it's like it becomes your whole life almost. No, let's just have everything red and black. Okay, I'll put a bit of black in there to make it a bit more interesting. Red. We want red.
I know. That's what I did for the first art house because everything in that house was designed to be red, black and white. Crockery, linen, everything. And so much of my wardrobe was red, black and white. And people would point it out to me and I'd just sort of laugh and go, yeah, I guess so. I have. But I'm thinking about it now. And maybe it is because I remember my daughter went through the whole Barbie pink and pastel yellow. Pastel taffeta yellow. You know that colour? And, you know, the frillier and pinker or lemon yellow, the better. And it was just, I couldn't stand it because I have to say they're two colours I've never latched onto. I've got a lot of green clothes now as well. A lot of green and some orange. I'm actually wearing orange pants. Yeah, so I have slowly morphed my wardrobe into, and it's funny because previously when we first met, it was a lot of probably a lot more fitted clothing. You know, the black and the red, they were like fitted big jackets because it was a really cold climate that we lived in, the big wool jackets and stuff like that. Whereas now I've moved into the whole linen. I'm in love with linen, the soft linen. I don't iron it because that's how linen's meant to be in my head because I don't own an iron. And I'm not warming the environment for my ego. This is my argument.
That's a really good one. I like that one. I'm definitely going to have to get you back because we got so much more to talk about for sure.
Yeah, thanks so much.
And to follow your progress because really, you know, you've got all the stuff all over you that you can't really show us because we're on a podcast for the radiotherapy next week.
Yep, little bits I've been drawn on, I've been graffitied on. Yeah, we'll see how we go. I'll let you know how we're going, because I mean, in 2 weeks in, I could be like, don't even look at me.
We'll put a link to your, do you post stuff on Facebook or YouTube? Where does it go?
Oh, I do both.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. So I'll put links up to your two things so that people can follow you if they want to. Follow Kylie's progress, because you tend to post at the weirdest moments. It's like, oh, holy cow, she's just walking out of the clinic. Oh, she's sat in the waiting room. Oh, she's in the car. She's pulled over to have a chat.
I've got to do it when I think of it, because one of the side effects of the brain surgery is that I've done so much work on the memory, but I still am very aware that I have to write stuff down. So sometimes it's just a case of just do it now. So make sure I do it.
But they're really great because they're so honest, and it's just giving us you're just sharing all that information of what's happening right now, what you're feeling right now, just comes straight out of your mouth and onto your recorder. It's fabulous.
Unfiltered.
Yeah. You've had me in tears a few times.
I can tell you, there's been a few times where Robin, my partner, so I've just felt like shit, and I've just gone, I probably should post when I'm on the, when I'm like this, and he goes, probably, and I'm like, I can't. Nobody needs to see me like this, like this. Oh, look, it's, and I realise that I'm going to have, possibly another 5 years to pull out a few posts like that. We might get one or two while I'm having radiation therapy. Oh, and, you know, a little bit of a, look, I have a bright red boob. It's currently blue because I put a blue dye in this year. So I have a Smurf blue boob at the moment.
No.
Action. Yeah. Yep. So it's, and it's literally Smurf blue when you come out of hospital. It's hilarious. Wow. Circle about this big, and it's just like, oh, that works. I thought it would look like a bruise. No, it's Smurf blue. It's great.
Wow. Yeah. That's so cool.
The stuff no one tells you.
Oh my god. Right, let's finish there, if that's okay. Thank you so much.
Look,
amazing.
Entire, my pleasure.
That was fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Happy to talk about it. This is just my life right now.
Yeah, but it's, you know, you're one of those people that kind of, you just deal with the stuff life throws at you, and you have your meltdowns, but you do a lot of laughing with people. You just make fun of it, you know, can't do anything. So let's just, you know, let's take the piss out of it, because it's not going anywhere. So I'm just going to give it some stick.
Absolutely. I'm not the sort to sit in a corner and curl up and just, you know, give into it. So you might as well have fun with it.
Yeah. And we all do. We all go through those moments where it's just like, oh, I can't do this
anymore. Oh, look, and I have had them. I've absolutely had them with my poor partner. They like to hit me in the morning early when he's asleep. So he's woken up a few times with me just going, I don't need a cuddle. He's so good. But yes, I certainly have those times. But it's sort of, I'm also, I tend to avoid video myself when I'm having them. But like you said, I mean, it's, to be completely honest, then those times are also part of the journey.
And I think, you know, somebody watching those times, it also gives other people, that was what I was trying to say, it also gives other people permission to experience that in themselves without making it wrong.
Yes.
Because it's not all laughter and roses and not nice half the time.
It's not nice half the time. So I will, yeah, you're right. And I have thought that it would be, you know, even if it helps one person feel that it's okay to have a shit day, then, you know, it's worth doing, because I'm going to have a shit day anyway. It's not going to change anything by me holding the camera up to myself and just showing people I'm having a shit day. So I'll just apologize in advance for you crying again in future. Sorry about that.
It's all good. I was going to say something else. Oh, yeah. That's the other thing that would be really interesting to talk about, if you're willing, is you getting back into the dating market.
Oh, God. Yep.
As an older person, because I just think about that and go, I'd just hibernate for the rest of my life. I'd just be like, yeah, nah, not doing it again.
Well, look, we'll do another one on that, because as you know, I did a lot of work personally on myself around dating. I actually worked with groups and with a mentor in Canada to learn about myself within the dating sphere and to learn about the energy that I was putting out and therefore what I was attracting with that energy. And so I did a lot of work around getting myself into the space to go into the dating field to attract what I actually wanted in a partner, as opposed to attracting what my energy was attracting. And to work out why my energy was attracting toxic men. And so I had to work out what about it was me was attracting and accepting toxic men. So I've done a whole heap of work about that. So I'm more than happy to have a chat about what that's like out there in the real world, online dating. I know. Dun, dun, dun. It's like that.
I wish, I half wish this was going out as a video, because Kylie's expression as she said that was just, I just lost it. It was fantastic. But yeah, definitely we need to talk about that as well.
I get fired up about that because I've done a lot of work in that area and I find it fascinating as to what it is, you know, it in that energy exchange, as to what we put out, as to what we attract, as to what we think we want, what we actually don't want, and how much of that is driven by our childhood and our past experience. And we're so unconscious of it all. So I get as fired up about that as I do about houses and food.
Ooh.
Oh, I know.
And colours.
And colours. And it's pretty things.
Oh, that's so awesome. Thanks so much, Kylie. You have been amazing as always.
Thank you for having me, inviting me to do this. This was fun.
It was fun. Yeah. I like fun.
We need more fun in our life.
We do. We do. We need to just do things that we enjoy rather than doing things that, you know, the hard work and serious. This could have been serious discussion.
I know. We need to bust this myth that adulting is about the difficult stuff.
Yeah.
Adulting just means we get to have fun with bigger words.
Oh, my God.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Menopause, Marriage and Motherhood podcast. I'm Karen O'Connor. Join me next time for more conversation, laughter and fun as we navigate our way through all the things that midlife throws at us. Please click on the subscribe button so you get notifications of new episodes. And don't forget that all the links and information that we've spoken about in this podcast is available on the podcast page of my website. If you have any ideas for topics you'd like us to chat about, or if you have an inspiring story that you'd like to share, I'd love to hear from you. And constructive feedback is always welcome. Thanks so much for listening. I'm looking forward to talking to you again next time. Bye for now.